I'm Femi OK. You're watching the stream. On today's episode, we're checking in on Afghanistan, where 80% of the country is impacted by drought. The economy is flailing due to sanctions. Unemployment is on the rise. Salaries aren't being paid. And millions of people are facing food insecurity. They will go hungry this winter. There is so much to talk about. Are there solutions? This is where I want you to be part of our program. You can ask our panel anything to do with Afghanistan. I know they will do their best to answer you, but your comments right here in the comment section be part of today's show. And meet our panel, Ali, Shelley, Suleiman. So good to have you on the stream. Ali, welcome back. Please remind our audience who you are, what you do.
I'm Ali Latifi. I'm the online correspondent for Al Jazeera English covering Afghanistan.
Good to have you. Hello, Shelley. Welcome back to the stream. Remind our audience who you are and what you do.
Shelley Thackrell, I'm the World Food Programme spokesperson for Afghanistan based in Kabul.
Good to have you. Suleiman, welcome to the stream. Introduce yourself to our international audience.
Sure. Salam and hello. I'm Suleiman bin Shah. I was a Deputy Minister of Industry and Commerce until August 15 this year of Afghanistan.
I'm going to start, yes, with Deborah Lyons. She is the UN Secretary General's Special Representative for Afghanistan. I want to ask you what you feel is the most pressing problem, challenge that Afghanistan is facing right now. This is Deborah Lyons, and she points her finger at the economy. Let's have a look. Let's have a listen.
The financial sanctions applied to Afghanistan have paralyzed the banking system, affecting every aspect of the economy. GDP has contracted by an estimated 40%. Cash is severely limited. Traders cannot obtain letters of credit. People who have worked and saved for years cannot access their savings. Civil servants' salaries cannot be paid in full, if at all. Hospitals are running out of medicine and turning away patients. Prices have gone up as goods have become scarcer, instituting a punishing tax on the poorest and most vulnerable Afghans.
That is quite a list of the impact of sanctions. Ali, is that where you would start our conversation today? Is that the biggest, most pressing issue, the sanctions on Afghanistan?
Yes, and I think Ms. Lyons actually put it perfectly. You know, all of the points that she hit, it shows exactly what has happened in only 4 or 5 months' time. And the other thing that, you know, we have to point out is that she made the statement at the United Nations, and many of the bodies and nations involved in the decision that led to these sanctions were in attendance at the United Nations or are members of the United Nations or are affiliated with the United Nations. And yet it seems like all of these calls are falling on deaf ears. You know, as she said, this has amounted to attacks on the poorest people. It's not the Taliban leadership that's suffering. You know, the Taliban leadership lived for years in Doha with no problems. They lived in Dubai. Their families lived in Dubai. They had shelter in Iran. They had shelter in Pakistan. They had no problems financially, and they have no problems financially now. But the people who have problems financially in Afghanistan currently are the citizens of Afghanistan, including what would have been called the quote-unquote middle class only 6 months ago. It's the poorest of the poor, and even people like Suleiman, who would have had, like, stable, you know, decent jobs with some kind of an income, now, you know, they don't know, you know, how much longer they can afford to feed their families or pay their rent.
Suleiman, you better speak up. Ali brought you into the conversation. Go ahead.
First of all, thanks for having me. The list of problems that, you know, mentioned in the report and now by Ali, I think is experienced every day by everybody in Afghanistan. I've been speaking to many different people across Afghanistan for the last 4 months, and the list of issues that come to us every day is sometimes beyond imagination. It's the people who at the end of the day are suffering political decisions made in Kabul, Doha, Washington, D.C., and many other capitals of the world. And that kind of has developed this new conversation outside on the street, you know, people almost discussing whether we really need international relations, whether we really need engagement in the international community, that the peace agreement signed in Doha would result into something like this. the humanitarian catastrophe that you can see in Afghanistan, we are experiencing in Afghanistan, is unfortunately an ugly disgrace to the blood of martyrs, to the blood of people, of precious lives that we have lost in the last 20 years, whether the American lives, the Afghan lives, or any other lives who were sacrificed in the last 20 years. So I believe, you know, right now, whenever there is a talk and people try to hide the real problem of, you know, people suffering in Afghanistan, which was in the past, and we have so many challenges in the future, without keeping that in consideration and just focusing on political objectives, makes it very, very hopeless for the Afghan nation, unfortunately.
Shelley, I've got two thoughts I want to share with you, then you can bounce off them with what you're doing right now in Afghanistan with the World Food Programme. So back here on my laptop, I've got Martin on Twitter. Martin says, I don't see the use of suspending the aid because at the end of the day, it's not the Taliban who are suffering. They are starving innocent people. That's happening now. And then I'm going to go to a lecturer at the University of Afghanistan who is working to bring food aid to people in Afghanistan. Have a listen to what he has to say, and then I'd love you to pick up immediately afterwards.
We started a food distribution campaign initially in Kabul and then in provinces all around Afghanistan. Our goal is to help families get through the difficult time. That's the famine that Afghanistan is currently facing. We're trying to provide food that helps mothers and children to avoid malnourishment and starvation. But it's dawning upon us that it's not enough, no matter what we do. Unless the Taliban and the international community find their common humanity and understand that there is no politics that justifies this large scale of suffering.
Yeah, don't punish children. It's an economic freefall. And this catastrophe, as the economy disintegrates, we've seen the currency drop by 25%. Bread, the cost of bread, it has doubled. That's a staple diet for families. We are, WFP, the World Food Programme, has fed 15 million people this year. We have to scale up to 23 million people in 2022. It's winter, it's cold. When we meet people, I was up in Badakhshan last week. I met a farmer who told me, I've lived through 19 governments, but I've never seen a day where it's so hard on me and my family. And this was his first time where he'd needed support from the World Food Programme. So his family have been affected by war, they've been affected by the drought, and now by the economic crisis. I asked him, well, surely there's peace now, right? Isn't that better? He looked at me and he said, what I'm facing at this moment, this hunger, not being able to put food in front of my family, the war was probably better.
Ali, I'm just looking at a post that you shared on Twitter, and it's a website that I recommend and a Twitter feed I recommend everybody look at called Everyday Kandahar. So this is a very common sight in Afghan cities. In Kabul, people began doing this along some of the busiest streets back in August, and now we're in December. So here's this man. He's selling the last few bits and pieces in his house to feed his family. And you say this is common. How common is it, Ali?
It's unbelievably common. You know, it's when I was still in the Emirate, you know, up until mid-September, every street you would go on, the biggest neighborhoods in Kabul, there would be people, you know, there would be the sides of the streets, there would be refrigerators and microwaves and vacuum cleaners and dishes and knives and forks and rugs and carpets, just whatever people could find. They were selling. And the one thing that I pointed out about that picture from Everyday Kandahar is if you look at it, it's the bare bones left in his house. It's the most simple, most basic objects. You know, these weren't the refrigerators, these weren't the flat screen TVs, these weren't the rugs and the carpets. These were like the most basic utensils, the most basic supplies. So what does that say? A, it says that he's down to like the very last things in his house. And B, that he probably didn't have very much to begin with. Because all of these problems that we're talking about, they existed over the last 20 years. But what's happened is that now they've compounded and they've sort of went into overdrive in just 4 months' time. You know, the economy was already in shambles. It was already artificial. And then when you take away all of the foreign money and all of the aid, this is what you get. You get people selling literally the most basic supplies in their house to try and feed their children.
So, Suleiman, the stream asked the IMF about withholding money. And this is what they told us. I'm going to share part of their statement with you. I'm sure you're familiar with why certain big organizations who previously put money into Afghanistan are withdrawing it right now. As is always the case, the IMF is guided by the views of the international community, since there continues to be a lack of clarity within the international community regarding recognition of a government in Afghanistan. Our engagement remains paused. Suleiman.
I think this is a perfect example of what I wanted to say earlier, that we have reached to a point, the Afghan nation has reached to a point where, believe me or not, we just don't want any engagement anymore. I mean, what did the engagement brought us in the first place? You know, we are, the Afghan people are now blamed that, you know, simply because they could not get up, you know, they could not get up against the armed Taliban. They conquered Afghanistan province by province and finally came to Kabul and finally into the presidential palace. And somehow I think the international community now expects that, you know, we would have, the U.S. forces were here, other nations were here, their diplomatic personnel was here, their militaries were here, and everything was happening right in front of our eyes. I simply remember August 15, when I was getting out of the palace and I was making my way in the mayhem back to my office. I think I can recall every single thing that I just said to you. We had an agreement seen, we saw an agreement in 2018 where Taliban sat with the Americans. Tough negotiations for all parties involved, I believe, was a recognition. When they signed the peace deal, it was a recognition in that time. And so everything that followed is basically implementation of that document. If you look and refer to that document, and we don't even know what the annexes had. But in my view, that was kind of a recognition and whatever, you know, happened after that. August 15 was something probably unimaginable. I agree. You know, everybody knows this. Everybody agrees to it. But there was some power-sharing agreement already agreed by the international community for Taliban. So now saying that there is absolutely no international recognition or something of the sort, I think, this can be just a political excuse, but nothing else.
Shelley, at the World Food Programme, you are really adroit at working in politically, I'm going to put this carefully, politically sensitive areas, because you don't care. You just want to get food to people who really need it. Some money has been released. The World Food Programme are getting some money. How are you operating within this, can I say, no man's land of politics, geopolitics, that is happening around Afghanistan, which has shut down a lot of the funding that you normally would have been able to count on?
The people come first, and WFP on the ground, we've been here for 60 years. We work nonstop, relentlessly, round the clock across all 34 provinces. We've got food already pre-positioned because of the winter, so we know when roads get cut off because of snow, we'll be able to get to people. When we do receive funds, often what we do is some of it's in kind, so we buy the food and the food comes in, and then that's taken to people who need our emergency assistance the most. So what we're seeing now is being able to use also cash. Obviously, cash is important for people in Afghanistan and anywhere in the world. It's dignity, it's choice. They can go to a shop, they can use vouchers. And we use we do work with certain banking systems here as well. But what we have such generous donors. It's incredible, people who look to the World Food Programme, look to the humanitarian crisis and say, what can we do? What do you need? We need $220 million a month in 2022 to feed people. That money is huge. But if you think about it, $100 per person, that's all it takes to make sure that we avert a crisis and nobody starves. And we make sure that especially the women who have been traumatized by this crisis, they come to you and they look at you. One woman at one of our distribution sites came to me. She showed me her hands. They were cracked because she washes hands for probably less than 100 Afghani a week. And she had six children. And she said to me, I want to die. I haven't eaten for 2 days. I don't know what to feed my children. I can't pay my rent. What's worth living for?
Audience, I want to give you a reality check from the Afghanistan Operations Coordinator for MSF. They spoke to us a little bit earlier and just reminded us that sometimes the infrastructure of Afghanistan is not particularly robust. So then when you add an economic sanctions on top of that, what are the people going to do? Let's take a look at the health system.
The health system was already very weak, lacking of resources. It was completely dependent on foreign aid. And today, since the takeover, because of the sanctions and the decisions from the donor to put on hold their money support to the country, these problems has been made more acute. Today, winter is coming. It is urgent to facilitate the delivery of aid, to take out every barriers that has been organized since mid-August. In order to avoid a humanitarian crisis in the making.
Ali, this conversation is almost unbearable. It must be unbearable if you're a citizen of Afghanistan just to listen to, well, we've got winter, we've got a health system that's collapsing, people aren't being paid. The list goes on and on and on. How are people that you're speaking to, how are they even managing?
They're not. They feel like they're treading water, you know, and this is something that's very important to understand is that in Afghanistan, especially over the last 20 years, there has always, unfortunately, been massive poverty. You know, the system's never fully reached those most in need. But now we have a situation where it's those people that unfortunately have always suffered for the last 20 years. And then people who, as I said earlier, had some kind of economic advancement, had some level of a stable life, who are literally wondering how long they can survive because their cash is running out. And when your cash runs out in Afghanistan, I don't care who you are, you're broke. You know, because in Afghanistan, cash is everything. That's how you pay for everything. That's how you live. That's how you survive. And what's most upsetting, and it goes sort of back to what Suleiman was saying earlier, is that, you know, all of these countries are meeting with the Taliban. They're sending their ambassadors, they're sending their representatives, the U.S. is flying to Doha to meet with the Taliban, and yet they say, we don't want to engage with them. Well, if you're talking to them, how is that not engagement? But also, fine, you don't want to engage them, you don't want to recognize them, don't. But in 5 months, you haven't figured out a single way to make sure that the most in-need people, imagine this woman coming and saying, I want to die. You know, she has children. That's the most, you know, un-Islamic, un-Afghan thing to say, but it's a thing out of desperation.
Yeah.
You know, and it's been 5 months later, and none of these countries in the EU and the UN and all these places cannot figure out how to deliver aid to people.
I want to bring in President Macron of France in here because he also sounds a little bit confused, but he was trying to bring some clarity to the situation in Afghanistan. So this is him talking in Doha on December the 4th, so just a couple of days ago. Here he is.
Notre représentation aujourd'hui est faite depuis Paris par notre ambassadeur, mais nous réfléchissons d'abord à une organisation, comme vous le savez, à plusieurs pays européens. Et donc notre approche va plutôt être, dans des conditions qui restent encore à définir, mais en particulier en termes de sécurité, l'idée d'avoir un site commun à plusieurs Européens où nos ambassadeurs,
if you don't speak French as fluently as I speak French, he's talking about European countries considering ways for them to be diplomatically present in Afghanistan without extending full recognition to the Taliban government. It's like, well, we want to be in, but we don't want to support the Taliban government. Suleiman, you've been talking about this for the whole of this program. It's like, how can you do a bit of recognizing, but not fully recognizing? It must be very frustrating for you. Can I share with you two headlines? Both of them can be true at the same time, but I think this is probably what is holding up some of the international aid. So Taliban rule marked by killings, litany of abuses, according to the UN. and then also from the Taliban. Taliban forced marriage of women in Afghanistan. That is now banned. In terms of the human rights, women's rights, girls' rights in Afghanistan right now, do you feel that there is enough that's happening that will unlock funds that should be going to people in Afghanistan?
So I'll have a very frank, you know, sharing with you. When I was the deputy minister, I was also responsible for our affairs in the World Trade Organization. And the World Trade Organization, Afghanistan is the least developing country. And so our entire trade agenda was revolving around those ecosystems that we had to develop, health, education, access to finance, so SMEs and businesses can grow, and so many other things. Now, when we talk about the stoppage or pause in the development and progress of all these ecosystems, including access to education, whether girls or boys, whether in Kabul or remote areas, health services, any single step that we could take, you know, one can argue that the last 20 years we had so many other problems like corruption and there was no progress at all that we ideally wanted. I agree with them. Sure, we were not perfect. But whatever tiny steps that we were taking, we're not taking them anymore. And it's painful at all levels. Yes, you know, you could see it, if you see it as milestones of commitments made between Taliban and the international community, sure. But there is still a certain segment of you know, young girls that cannot go to schools. So if we have to do comparisons, I think, again, the problem is with the West to see Afghanistan from the lenses that they have in their capitals. But on the ground, you know, things are not really white and black. You know, there are so many shades and there's so many grays that one has to consider. And one has to accumulate on all the positives and leave out all the negatives. If you ask me what's the best thing that has happened after Taliban have come, I would simply say just one thing, you know, the security. I can travel to any corner of Afghanistan just freely. But apart from that, there is absolutely nothing from anybody, the Taliban, the international community, the previous leadership, everybody involved in the affairs of Afghanistan, whether they being neighbors or in the international community or organizations, are responsible for what we are witnessing in Afghanistan. This is not just something caused by one individual or organization. Everybody involved, including me, including the previous government, you know, sort of responsible for why we were not prepared for a situation like this, why there was no discussion about economics, education, rights, and so many other things when the peace negotiations were happening, when the power sharing agreement was done. You know, I think it was pretty late,
right.
Too late.
Thanks,
right,
Suleiman.
Now to take actions.
All right, Suleiman, I like the way you depict Afghanistan as being tones of grey. We got that exact response from the director of the Kabul Institute for Peace when we asked him earlier, how is Afghanistan being governed right now? This is what he told us.
I think it'll be slightly unfair to judge whether the Taliban are able to manage the humanitarian disaster and the economic meltdown that we face with it right now here in Afghanistan. Because I believe that they're both external factors. One is that the assets of the central bank, $9.2 billion, have been frozen. And number two is that Afghanistan, de facto Taliban regime, is under U.S. sanctions. So therefore, this has caused the situation that we're in right now.
I'll leave you with a comment from YouTube. This is Kathy. What's the point of international humanitarian agencies if they choose whether to help or not? The country needs help. The main focus should be on humanity. The need right now is life, not choosing sides. Thanks for watching. Thanks for your YouTube comments. I'll see you next time. Suleiman, Ali, Shelley, appreciate you.